why don't you first just give me an idea how you came up with the title of this book?
Are we taping? Or you want to... George?
Yes.
Hello. Hi. So how we came up with the title of this book, I'm from the Center for Eco-Literacy, and Eco-Literate cuts to the chase. It's about what we are attempting to do, which is to further education for sustainable living. And that means helping people understand and care about the connections between humans and the natural world.
And why is something like this necessary, do you think?
Oh, I think as you have talked about in your show, we know that there are many great ecological challenges at the moment. And we believe deeply that this kind of education can really help change things, and it can lead to not only innovative solutions that we've seen coming from young people who are exposed to this kind of education, but it also actually improves the education experience itself. In the new book, Eco-Literate, it's about connecting emotional, social, and ecological intelligence and education. By connecting ecological intelligence with emotional and social intelligence, what we know is that builds on a very successful process of engaging kids in a way that means something to them. And schools that have emotional and social learning programs, for instance, have been shown to have increases in academic achievement on average of 11%. So this is something that we see as good for education as well as good for the environment and, frankly, for young people.
Yeah, what do you think the reason is for the boost in academic achievement for people who are for kids that are involved in this?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, you know, from the ecological perspective, we know that when kids and teachers get out in nature, it's very hands-on, it's very engaging, and so, you know, there's a lot more attention going on, and that tends to carry over into other areas as well. And by connecting the emotional and the social intelligence, that really helps tremendously because it's about, you know, starting where kids are at and helping them understand themselves better and helping them understand their relationship to other people better. And, you know, when they have that, they become much more capable of mastering all the subjects that they're challenged to master.
And you talk about sustainability as a community practice. What do you mean by that?
Well, we mean that it's, you know, if you look at nature as we do, as our greatest model of sustainability, because nature has sustained life for billions of years now, one of the things that becomes very, very, very clear is that nature, you know, sustains life through a network of relationships. And in order for us as human beings to learn how to live more sustainably than we are now, that means that we too have to look at the connections not only among ourselves but from all aspects of the natural world and see ourselves as part of this larger web of relationships in nature so that we can use that perspective to make better decisions and to guide our behavior so we're not engaging in practices that then, in fact, create problems for the natural world and us as part of that world.
Yeah, and the book also talks about some of the environmental problems that we have came from unintended consequences. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, there's that we present five eco-literate practices in the book. Because when you talk about something as large as understanding our connections to the natural world, that's, of course, an incredibly complex and far-reaching goal that one could spend lifetimes attempting to master. So we try to identify what we see as five core practices that anyone could work toward. And anticipating unintended consequences is one of those. It's saying, you know, we can't really really foresee all possible results of our actions. And so, for instance, when, you know, the spill happened, the BP explosion happened in New Orleans several years ago, you know, the consequences of such an accident hadn't been completely thought out. Well, we've had a lot of those kinds of experiences now on a grand scale. And what we're advocating is that we learn from those experiences and we try to anticipate, you know, and try to almost bring some humility to it and recognize that we do not know, we cannot know the results of all of our actions, but we have to try to be aware of them to the greatest extent possible and operate according to something of a precautionary principle to try to, you know, avoid damage to the natural world.
What kind of response are you getting to the book then?
Very enthusiastic. We're really thrilled because we've received some great reviews from people across a wide spectrum, from Richard Louv, who is the author of The Nature Principle, from Sir Ken Robinson, who is just a great educator many people admire. So, you know, and there's more than a dozen others that are whose reviews are in the book itself. So I think we're very enthusiastic. There's the book itself, Ecoliterate, is based on stories. There are, at its heart, eight stories of these inspiring educators and community leaders and young people who are really taking creative action to address some of the ecological challenges that we now face. And so ultimately, it's very inspiring, and that's what we hope will really draw people to this book.
Now, beyond like kids using this book or being taught these types of things in a classroom, that sort of thing, what can parents do to help their children become eco-literate?
Well, certainly, you know, as a growing number of parents are doing, just getting their kids out in nature more helps tremendously. You know, getting the kids to grow some of their own food and then eat it, you know, that helps tremendously, because in that simple process, even if it's not, you know, some big fancy garden, in the process of helping kids grow something at home, there's the opportunity for many lessons to come about. So there are many, many ways, and I think that parents would find that while this book is, you know, primarily targeted to educators, we absolutely wrote it with parents in mind. So I think they'd find a lot of ideas in there.
Talk a little bit about what the Center for Ecoliteracy does then.
Sure. The Center for Ecoliteracy is a nonprofit, and we are dedicated to education for sustainable living, as I mentioned at the outset. So what we do is we work with schools, K to 12th grade schools, and we do a number of things. We provide materials such as the book Ecoliterate and some of our other many publications, and we offer seminars. We have a very rich website that has lots of publications that people can download and use, and we provide many ideas based on our experience of working with educators for how to integrate the, you know, sustainable and ecological worldview into teaching and learning.
How can people get more information then about the organization?
Well, I would love people to visit the website, which is www.ecoliteracy.org. I should spell that. It's ECOLITERACY, so ecoliteracy.org. And there is a lot of information about the new book, Ecoliterate, on there. There is an excerpt from it, in fact, if people want to get a little taste of it. The book is also available through Amazon and the other online booksellers. And a number of them actually do have excerpts and ways to look inside the book so people could get a taste of it.
Now, besides the positive feedback, have you gotten any pushback on any of your ideas?
Not yet. you know, people often in other work that we've done, people often say, "Well, how can you really expect schools to take on anything else?" I mean, that's kind of a common general pushback, I guess, that we do hear. And you know, we completely understand that the expectations of educators are really rather over the top, and you know, educators absolutely need more support in the work that they're doing, and so when we develop these things, what we're very mindful of doing is offering it as a support. It's not an additional kind of thing that we're suggesting that educators now have to take on this, that, and the other. It's a different perspective that can be woven into any topic that a teacher is engaging in. We've seen it come about in math classes and literature and history and all kinds of things. It's, you know, it's a shift in worldview that's recognizing our relationship in the to other living beings in the natural world, and that can be integrated in what teachers are now doing. And the good news is, you know, that not only is it great for kids and their academic performance, but educators really love this. So it's very rewarding. You know, they're helping build resiliency in young people and you know, engaging them in the real natural world, and most people tend to love that.
Yeah, I can see we're having something like this to draw interest from other subjects, you know, from other areas, could be very beneficial. So
yeah.
All right, that answers my questions. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with you a little bit, and you know, we're very excited about this. We think it's very, you know, positive for the environment. It's positive for educators. It's positive for young people. And I hope that your listeners will check it out. And best place to start is ecoliteracy.org.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for calling.